You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
On December 9, 2008, Rod Blagojevich, the governor of Illinois, and John Harris, his chief of staff, were arrested by FBI agents for what U.S. Attorney Patrick Fitzgerald called a staggering level of corruption. A month later, Governor Blagojevich was impeached by the state assembly, and in April of this year, he was indicted on 16 racketeering, fraud, and extortion counts. His close friend and fundraiser, Christopher Kelly, who was also indicted, died this past Saturday, possibly a suicide. Despite all of the evidence to the contrary, Rod Blagojevich has never admitted doing anything wrong. In fact, in his new memoir, The Governor, Finally the Truth Behind the Political Scandal That Continues to Rock the Nation, he likens his rise and fall to Shakespearean tragedies like Othello and Hamlet. The book is published by Phoenix Books, and it brings Rod Blagojevich to our show today. Hello.
Hi, how are you?
And it is telling that it's published by Phoenix Books, which is, of course, rising from the ashes.
It is.
That's
telling.
What you hope to do, I think.
That's what I intend to do, and if the truth prevails, that's what will happen.
First of all, I was sorry to hear that your good friend Christopher Kelly passed away over the weekend. When was the last time you spoke to him?
Thanksgiving night. He called me, surprisingly, Thanksgiving night, just to kind of talk a little bit. I hadn't.
So that was a long time ago.
It was a long time ago, and before that, he had chosen to sort of leave the political world maybe a year and a half before that, because he was disillusioned by what had befallen him, and now, of course, he's apparently taken his own life. And the story behind that is because he did some wrong things. He acknowledged the wrongdoing. He was involved in some criminal activity that had nothing to do with me or my administration, had to do with contracts at O'Hare Airport, which come under the purview of Mayor Daley and not my administration. He honed up to that, admitted that in court, and pled guilty to those things. But evidently the prosecutors were pressuring him to lie about me, and he refused to do so. And notwithstanding the fact that he would have been able to receive a significantly reduced sentence, he honored the truth. And when he did something wrong, he said he did it wrong, but he wouldn't lie just because he was pressured to do it, and he chose, because of the pressure he was under, to rather than do that prison time and maybe more that they were threatening him with, he decided to take his own life and leave behind three little girls and a wife. And I'm deeply saddened and feel just awful about the whole situation.
Well, he was actually the only holdout. Later we'll talk about some of the people who have agreed to cooperate. But going back to December 9th, 2008, I'd like to play a clip from U.S. Attorney Patrick Fitzgerald in which he lays out the first of three announcements about your conduct while in office.
I will give you one example. A month or so ago, a $1.8 billion tollway project was announced. And while that tollway project was being announced, Governor Blagojevich was privately seeking to have a person benefiting from that contract raise $100,000 in contributions. And privately, the government said, I could have made a larger announcement, but wanted to see how they would perform by the end of the year. If they don't perform, bleep them. That's a quote. And the word bleep was not the word he used.
So he was quoting from a tape recording of a conversation of yours?
Well, he quoted from several conversations, and he took out of context snippets of those conversations at that press conference.
Well, what did he get wrong there?
He got a lot wrong. He got the context wrong. And then what he did was he went into court and got a protective order which prohibits me from telling you what the full context of that conversation is, much less giving you a chance or the public a chance to hear the whole conversation and all the conversations so you can fully understand the nature of the conversations and what the talk was about. And I would remind you and your listeners that talking about things, exploring ideas, and discussing things, however stupid they may be, are not crimes.
Well, he played the complete tapes to the grand jury, didn't he? And they found them compelling enough to indict you. You're saying that this was just you, going over some possible ideas rather than saying, I definitely want to do this?
Again, I wish I could tell you the full context of the conversation. There'll be a chance, hopefully, in court to be able to do that. That obviously is an unflattering characterization, how he said that. I'm not even sure it was exactly how he said it. Let me simply say this, and this will characterize why this story is upside down. That very day, after he had me arrested at 6 o'clock in the morning, And I write in my book that the morning before I had decided on a United States Senate pick, I had directed my chief of staff to work out a political deal that was very routine. And Rahm Emanuel, the new president's chief of staff, was involved. Other U.S. senators were willing to help us. In other words, we would create jobs through an investment in public works, expand health care for 50,000 to 300,000 working people, and we'd have a commitment not to raise the income tax on people in Illinois. In exchange for that, I was going to appoint the Illinois Attorney General, Lisa Madigan, whose father is the House Speaker, who was blocking all these initiatives. Personally, painful to me, yet it was the best deal I can get for the people of Illinois. He said at that press conference that he had me arrested to stop a crime spree before it happened. I'm quoting him. And that Abraham Lincoln would roll over in his grave. That's a flat-out mutilation of the truth. It is not true. The morning before, over the telephone, that was the direction I gave. That was an act, and that was a decision. And the irony here is that my accuser goes into court after he takes those conversations out of context and slaughters me in the media and creates a sensational storm that leads to the unseating of a governor elected twice by the people. He does that and prohibits me from telling you what those conversations are or even having you or the media hear all those conversations.
Well, could you talk to the grand jury about them?
No. As you know, grand juries are one-sided. Nobody cross-examines anybody. There's an old saying, I'm a former prosecutor. You can indict a ham sandwich at a grand jury. You can just have people say things and no one contradicts it, and that's the end of it.
You begin Chapter 3 by writing in all caps, I come out of Chicago politics, out of the remnants of the old Chicago Democratic political machine. That machine was first built in the late 1920s and the early 1930s by the George Washington of the Democratic machine, Mayor Anton Cermak. Then you go on to explain that Cermak was it Cermak or Chermak?
I've always known him as Cermak because there's a road named after him called Cermak Road. So it could have been Cermak, but I wasn't
born
there.
I guess in the old world it would have been Cermak. He was assassinated while he was in Florida, but then he built a political machine that was held together, you say, by a patronage system that rewarded political work like canvassing neighborhoods for votes with government jobs. So does that justify whatever activities you might have engaged in? Are you saying that they're just business as usual?
Well, let me be clear. I'm not looking for any justification for any of my behavior because I didn't do anything wrong. I never violated a law. I never intended to violate a law. If I'm guilty of anything that's consistent with what was said in those tapes is that I've used profanity in private conversations. I acknowledge that. But under no circumstances was any crime committed by me, nor was it ever intended to be committed by me. And again, when you hear the conversations in their full context, you'll have a better appreciation of it. I wrote that just to give the readers a little bit of background on the Chicago Democratic political world that I came out of. And as a student of history, I wrote about the Cermak organization, which was a prelude to the one that Mayor Daley's father built up in a more modern era, and that this particular Mayor Daley still in some respects is sort of the head of.
Well, why even mention it if you have nothing to do with the sort of thing that Cermak was involved with?
Well, I mention it again because I'm telling...
You come out of that, the remnants of that machine.
It's a memoir, as you say, and therefore a bit of your life story is in it. The reality is my political career began because I fell in love with a ward boss's daughter. My wife Patty's father's a Chicago alderman, one of those ward chieftains in the Byzantine politics of Chicago, and that's where my political career began, sort of unexpected, and I described that in the book further on in that chapter, I think.
Yeah, he's not talking to you anymore. Is that true?
No, we have a strained relationship. He spent Christmas Eve with us, but I write in the book about that's the Shakespearean part of the story, a part of it anyway, and that is that, you know, part of being governor is you have to make hard decisions, and I had a decision relating to a landfill that my father-in-law was involved in where he was going to benefit financially. We had learned, information came to me, that he was operating without the proper permits. I could have chosen to do what they do in Illinois politics and probably a lot of other places, look the other way and allow a member of my family to profit from it. And I knew, because threats were coming my way, that if I acted as I did, there would be consequences to pay. Yet I did my public duty, closed the landfill down. It went to court. The court sustained what we did. They got their permits. They went back in business. An angry father-in-law then accused Chris Kelly, my late friend, of selling board and commission appointments in exchange for campaign contributions. He retracted that false accusation. under a threat of a lawsuit. But that began, I believe, the scrutiny that both of us became under, and it became, an effort that these prosecutors felt they needed to do something to justify all the work they did for 4 years.
My guest is Rod Blagojevich. His book, The Governor, Finally, The Truth Behind the Political Scandal That Continues to Rock the Nation. It's published by Phoenix Books. Well, one of the things that we've noticed after we booked you was that the blogosphere is filled with people who are angry that anybody is giving you a chance to talk. They're frustrated. They say that that you continue to be making excuses. How do you respond to that? There are so many people who really who think that this whole thing is really just you protecting your butt.
I would say to them, whatever happened to the presumption of innocence? Whatever happened in a free country to be given a chance to attack and prove that false accusations against you are just that, false? I would say to them that before they enter judgment, they should learn something about the facts and the information and get all the facts. The reality is very few people have heard anything but that, those outrageous allegations with conversations that were taken out of context and designed to smear me. And this is among the reasons why I wrote the book, and it's why I'm doing what I'm doing. I'm fighting back. If I did these things, I wouldn't be doing what I'm doing. But I know I didn't do them. And let me point out to those who are skeptical or even angry, here's the upside-downness of the situation. The accuser took snippets of conversations from taped court recordings, sensationalized them, led all of us and you to believe that I did certain things wrong.
He did that to the grand jury as well? He didn't play them in total?
I bet you he didn't. I don't know for sure how they operated, but as I've said, as a former prosecutor, the grand jury, you can indict anything at a grand jury. It's all one-sided. But here's the bottom line. He's gone to court to prevent me from having you hear those tapes, your critics or my critics hearing those tapes, or even me fully being able to describe to you what those conversations were.
Well, we will take a little break. When we come back, we'll get you answering some of the other allegations that have been made. My guest is Rod Blagojevich. His book, The Governor, Finally, The Truth Behind the Political Scandal That Continues to Rock the Nation, published by Phoenix Books. Stay with us. We're back with Rod Blagojevich, who served as the 40th governor of Illinois, first elected to the U.S. House of Representatives from Illinois' 5th District in 1996, and then elected governor in 2002, reelected in 2006, and then forced from office this year. He's written a book called The Governor, Finally, The Truth Behind the Political Scandal That Continues to Rock the Nation, published by Phoenix Books. One of the allegations is that you delayed a $2 million grant to a public charter school while trying to extort campaign cash from Rahm Emanuel, who's now the White House chief of staff, and you threatened to withhold future state business from financial institutions that refused to hire your wife. What do you say about that?
They're just outrageously false. Rahm Emanuel, if that happened, Rahm Emanuel endorsed me after this allegation for governor. He was there the night before. At a rally speaking on my behalf. Rahm Emanuel was on the telephone with me as recent as the first Saturday after the presidential election, years after these allegations, as a supporter and a friend and a congressman who I worked with and now to be a future chief of staff. And in that conversation, he asked me if I'd be willing to appoint his successor because he wanted to hold the seat so that he might come back in 2 years after he serves the Obama administration and become a congressman again, and maybe one day, as I thought he would become, Speaker of the House.
So you're suggesting that he requested something a little questionable on his
own? No, I'm not. Absolutely not. We both talked about whether I had the legal authority to do these things. Our lawyers were working at it. My point being, this is how ridiculous and outrageous some of these allegations are, that they would allege something like that. That school got its money. The school was not entitled to its money. Rahm asked me as a favor whether I could do it, and I said I would. I frankly shouldn't be talking about this case. But again, when you hear these false accusations, and they're so outrageous, if you're an honest person, you have this tremendous need to get out and set the record straight. I'll wait till court, and I probably should talk less about some of the details. But let me say again, Rahm Emanuel, up until the arrest, was engaged in conversations with us, and he was the guy, I write in my book, I wanted to make that deal to create jobs and health care, not raise taxes, and he was working with us involved in this. And then the peculiar coincidence is that prosecutor heard the conversation the morning before and came and arrested me and stopped me from doing the best I could for the people of Illinois. To quote him, Abraham Lincoln would have rolled over in his grave at his conduct.
So let's play something else from U.S. Attorney Patrick Fitzgerald in this regard.
In addition to the pay-to-play allegations, which are described in greater detail in the complaint, we also were surprised to learn of an extortionate attempt against the Chicago Tribune newspaper. The Chicago Tribune had not been kind to Governor Blagojevich, had written editorials that called for his impeachment, and Governor Blagojevich and defendant John Harris, his chief of staff, schemed to send a message to the Chicago Tribune that if the Tribune Company wanted to sell its ball field, Wrigley Field, in order to complete a business venture, the price of doing so was to fire certain editors, including one editor by name. In the governor's words, quote, fire all those bleeping people, get them the bleep out of there, and get us some editorial support, close quote, and the bleeps are not really bleeps.
So you didn't do that either?
This is just an outrageous characterization. He's got the facts completely wrong. Hear the whole conversation and hear the whole story behind that deal with Wrigley Field and the Cubs and how I was working to help the Cubs and the owner of the Tribune, notwithstanding their paper's position on me, because I wanted to be sure the people of Illinois did not lose Wrigley Field. It's the third biggest tourist attraction in our state. And we wanted to make sure that when Sam Zell sold the Cubs, that the Cubs, in fact, would stay at Wrigley Field with a new owner. This was all, and it was driven by me because I'm a Cubs fan and I recognize the importance of the Cubs to the economy of Illinois. It's completely upside down. And again, twisted and mischaracterized. I'll have a chance to prove that that's the case in court. And when I know the truth as I do, again, the allegations are outrageous.
But it's not surprising to hear that sort of thing because the political game is often played that way. There is often a lot of arm twisting, isn't there?
Look, and you have to even question whether even the allegations, assuming they're true, are even crimes in some of these cases. And I'm not suggesting that I'm acknowledging that that's an accurate characterization because it doesn't tell the full story.
I mean, you wouldn't be the first politician to say, you know, I really don't want to cooperate with you until you fire somebody who's been giving me a hard time.
Let me simply say that is upside down. That is not the case at all. And I wish you can hear all of the conversations in all of those tapes so you get an understanding of that particular deal as well and hear people talk about how I was working to get that done for the Tribune, notwithstanding their position against me.
Are you suggesting that you've never twisted an arm?
How do you define that?
Well, you tell somebody you're not going to get what you want if you don't play along. I mean, that's
what
part
does that
of
mean,
what
play
power.
Along?
Well, whatever it is, you know.
Did I twist arms of legislators to pass health care? Yes. Did I twist arms of legislators to pass the jobs bill? Yes. Did I do it? And twisting arms is a characterization. I didn't literally twist arms. I got to be careful.
We understand.
Yeah.
Sometimes you pressure people.
Yes.
One way or another.
Yeah, and did I pressure them to make sure they didn't raise taxes on people? Yes. Minimum wage increases? Yes. Giving every uninsured woman access to mammograms and pap smears? Yes.
But not more favorable coverage from the newspaper.
I want to give you my answer,
okay.
Because the answer is I'm not supposed to talk about the case, but I will say that is false. I never talked to some newspaper person or anybody in a high place with the newspapers along those lines whatsoever. The Chicago Tribune was so bad to me, it was ridiculous to even think they would change their position. That wasn't the issue at all. You have to hear the whole story.
Your approval rating was 4% when you were forced out. Where were your defenders at this point? Did nobody go along with that?
And you get your information from where? What do you base that information from, the approval rating?
Well, from newspapers, Chicago Tribune,
yeah.
Obviously.
Yeah, I'm not so sure that that's an accurate indication. When you've been arrested, whatever it was, what couldn't have been good after you've been arrested, and that prosecutor mischaracterized and twisted the truth and mutilated the truth and said those things. I can tell you that I never lost an election in Illinois. I was elected twice governor. I was prevented from proving my innocence in a Senate impeachment trial, and here's the sickening part, and you guys don't get the information. They were not even required to prove wrongdoing. They didn't have to prove any wrongdoing. And just to give you a sense of just how ridiculous the impeachment was, one of the articles of impeachment had to do with me as the first governor in America to defy the FDA, working with then-Congressman Rahm Emanuel. We went to Canada to get safe and affordable prescription drugs from our senior citizens because the big drug companies block the importation of prescription drugs. I was reelected, in part, I think, because senior citizens and others appreciated that. They then impeached me on it when they felt they had a cause after I was arrested by the prosecutor.
Well, what was in it for Patrick Fitzgerald, whose previous major case was going after Scooter Libby?
That's a question you should ask him.
Well, what do you think?
Well, I have a very strong opinion, but it would be inappropriate for me to tell you. I think when this whole thing plays out, you'll see precisely what the motivation probably was. And you have to remember, too, you had a brand-new president coming in. Both President Obama and I had a common relationship in Tony Resco, who I write about. President Obama said his relationship with Tony Resco, who was convicted of corruption charges. The Obamas bought property with his wife. Said President Obama looked back and characterized that relationship as being boneheaded. Knowing what I know now, Tony Resco not being the guy President Obama or I thought he was, I call that relationship stupid. When people say, well, what mistakes do you acknowledge? That's clearly one. I trusted some people I shouldn't have trusted. There's no question about that. But, you know, you got to think about the record of mine in Illinois. I've done nothing wrong, and this is not the good works you do is not a defense to wrongdoing. I didn't do any wrongdoing. But we became the first state in America to give every child health care. We became the only state in America to give all of our senior citizens free rides on public transportation. We became the only state to have all of our 3- and 4-year-olds have access to preschool like the governor's kids can do. I put a record amount of money in public education but wouldn't raise taxes on people. We raised the minimum wage twice for working people. I went around the legislature to give all 261,000 uninsured women access to mammograms and pap smears, routine mammograms that insured women get that will save lives because breast cancer, if it's detected early, is 95% curable, but if it's detected late, your chances of survival are 26%. I did these things for the people. I did nothing wrong. I made enemies. I ruffled feathers because I kept pushing and prodding to get things done.
Well, why would they even collect those tapes? I mean, why were you somebody who they would be that they would be wiretapping and having people tape conversations with?
That's a good question for them. You should ask them that question. I suspect part of it had to do with Mr. Resco's issues. But let me point out something about Tony Resco, and again, the media doesn't seem to pick up on it. Tony Resco, before he was convicted of the crimes that
he's in jail right now.
Yeah, before they convicted him, wrote a letter to the federal sentencing judge, and this is an important point to make. He wrote a letter saying that prosecutors were trying to get him to lie about Obama and about me. Barack Obama was then a United States senator running for president. I was a governor of Illinois. He said in that letter he was not going to lie about us. And that, in that letter, he said, neither one of us were involved in any wrongdoing with him. They have then convicted him. They put him in, according to published reports, they put him in a cell for 23 out of 24 hours a day. And they've been put him in a position where he couldn't watch TV, read newspapers, hear the radio, have no contact with people. They broke him. And now he's changed his story about me. These are the lengths that these prosecutors are going to get their prey, as I write in the book. A friend of mine is forced to take his life because he won't lie about me to reduce his sentence. Resco is forced to change his position. There's a pattern here. And these prosecutors take these tapes. They talk about them publicly, violating every ethical standard of prosecutors out of context. Then they go into court and prevent me from having you hear the full story. There's a pattern here, and I wonder whether or not some of you in the media will start asking those questions.
Well, he's not the only one who is reported to be cooperating with the prosecutor. We also have John Harris, who was indicted along with you, your former chief of staff. Then Monk, also the Alonzo Lon Monk, mm-hmm. another former chief of staff. They're all supposedly talking these days.
Well,
by the way, before you say anything, we want to welcome back our listeners from AM. This is WNYC, WNYC AM and FM now. And my guest is Rod Blagojevich, who's written a book called The Governor. Finally, the truth behind the political scandal that continues to rock the nation. It's published by Phoenix Books. I'm Leonard Lopate. So all of these people who used to work with you are now suddenly cooperating. Is it because they all were broken by the government?
Well, there were 57,000 people that worked for me, and there were hundreds of them that worked with me.
Yeah, but I'm talking about top-level chiefs of staff.
There were scores and dozens of top-level people who worked with me, none of whom are saying anything. The common denominator on any of those that you were talking about is that they've done some things wrong independent of me. And in order to reduce or ease their burden, they're now perhaps, and we're not even sure if it's even true, perhaps prepared to say some things that aren't true. With regard to Harris, I write in my book, we think he's admitting to things that aren't even crimes. I suggest he get himself another lawyer. And you have to remember, so you get a full context here. John Harris worked at O'Hare Airport for Mayor Daley, where we know corruption existed because my friend Chris Kelly evidently was involved in that. And I have a suspicion that maybe John Harris could have been involved in some of that stuff at O'Hare Airport.
This is the current Mayor Daley.
That preceded at O'Hare Airport, that preceded me and anything that I knew about. And when they find those things about activities that precede me, they go to a guy and they say to him, you know, you've got real serious jeopardy here, but we'll go easy on you if you can tell us something about somebody we'd like to get.
Why haven't they gone after Mayor Daley if there's
Mayor
so
Daley's been
around
under heavy federal scrutiny for years and currently is and still is. And they've actually convicted top staffers close to him.
Well, you have argued that some very powerful people in Chicago are against you. Some people say that they don't know why you believe it to be the case, but can you explain why you think you've upset the power brokers of Illinois?
I can tell you why. I had a political situation where the Democratic House Speaker, the Democratic Party chairman, who was interested in his political agenda, I believe he presides over what is a corrupt status quo in Springfield. It's the great irony. He's a prominent real estate tax lawyer where by himself he can call a legislation that would provide property tax relief to homeowners, yet he doesn't do it because he represents big downtown commercial properties for legal fees. He's become a wealthy man doing that. How that is legal or ethical is beyond me, yet that's the kind of status quo I fought. He was determined to block a lot of my initiatives. I write in my book that on January 14th of 2006, he came to my campaign office with his daughter, the Illinois Attorney General, our chief law enforcement officer, the year before she had subpoenaed fundraising records from that very campaign office. Yet 1 year later, notwithstanding the ethics or even the appearance of impropriety, they were in my office with other Democrats and staffers asking me for about $400,000 in campaign contributions. He wanted 2.5% of the $12 million I had on campaign funds on hand for my reelection campaign to use for his coordinated campaign effort for his candidate against the Democratic candidate for treasurer. The point I'm making is, and I wrote in my book, that I predicted correctly that when I turned them down, that not tomorrow or the next week, but over time, both of the Madigans would create problems. She publicly created problems during my reelection campaign, and then in a more sinister way, her father, the Speaker, blocked a work to try to stop a minimum wage increase, and then he was not successful, but he blocked the expansion of health care. And the two Madigans did something which is outrageous, and any Democrat or progressive who hears this, I think, should appreciate my frustration. President Bush changed the eligibility for the S-CHIP program. 35,000 poor people who used to have health care in Illinois had it taken away from them. I wanted the legislature to pass a law to protect them. The Senate president and the senators did it. Madigan, the House, blocked it. I went around the legislature. My lawyers advised me I could do to help those 35,000 poor people get their health care back. Both of the Madigans drew up a lawsuit that a Republican businessman filed to prevent those poor people from getting health care, and then they billed the state of Illinois $1.9 million to pay for those legal fees.
So you were really, as they saw it, a guy who was causing them trouble, a roadblock against their getting to be able to do the things they wanted to do.
To varying degrees.
Now, you mentioned talking to Rahm Emanuel about getting him back his seat in the House. Did you talk to him about Senator Obama's successor when he became president?
Yes, we had a full constructive conversation.
And you've insisted all throughout this that you were not trying to sell Obama's seat to the highest bidder. Just another one from, I know you, U.S. Attorney Patrick Fitzgerald. This time he talks about that. And this is the famous thing where he talked about Lincoln rolling over in his grave.
The conduct would make Lincoln roll over in his grave. The governor's own words describing the Senate seat, quote, it's a bleeping valuable thing, you just don't give it away for nothing, close quote. Another quote, I've got this thing, and it's bleeping golden, and I'm just not giving it up for bleeping nothing. I'm not going to do it, and I can always use it. I can parachute me there, quote. Those are his words, not our characterization, other than with regard to the bleep.
Now, did you say those things, or because in the past you've said you said the things, but they were taken out of context?
I know what any reasonable person would think would come after those statements. I know what you must think. It's completely false, and that was done purposefully to smear me. Again, why doesn't that prosecutor allow me to tell you exactly what comes after that so you can hear the whole story? It is a suspicious thing for them to be able to take that out of context. Then they go into court and say, that's it, conversation stops. You can't have the people who we just slaughtered you with hear the full context of that. Let me tell you, without going into the details of the tapes, under no circumstances was that about financial gain to me. That was about getting things done for people. It was about politics. It was about a discussion relating to helping on health care. It was about, as I recall, help to do things for the people of Illinois. And that's what the truth is. And when the full tapes are heard, people will hear that. Now, again, I can't go into the details. It's frustrating to hear that because it's so dishonest what they've done. And again, I think reasonable people would have to say, how is it that the accuser can take those conversations and then basically put them in a lock and safe, lock it up, and not allow the accused to have you hear all of those tapes? I'm the anti-Nixon here. This is the anti-Watergate. I'm not trying to block any of those tapes. I want you to hear them all.
In recent interviews, you've said that you'd like to seek office again. Do you believe, after all this, that you could run for office?
If the truth prevails and I'm fully vindicated, what I've said is I'm not writing myself off as having a role in terms of being involved in public service and helping people. I've spent my whole adult life doing it. I have been slandered, wrongfully accused of crimes I didn't commit. The people of Illinois had their governor twice elected, hijacked from them. Somebody is lying here. There are tapes that will prove the truth. I want you to hear those tapes. My accusers don't.
Did your lawyers think that writing this book was a good idea?
There was some division among the legal team. The more traditionalists would say no, and then the others would say yes. If you're an honest person, you tell the truth, notwithstanding the potential opportunity that the prosecutors would have to cross-examine you. The truth is what you write in the book. If it's the truth, it's going to be there next month. It was there last week, and it'll be there in 6 months.
And the book is called The Governor. Finally, the truth behind the political scandal that continues to rock the nation. It's published by Phoenix Books, and my great thanks to Rod Blagojevich for being my guest today.
Thanks for having me.